Tuesday, October 2nd, and we are oral history interviewers doing tape 2, side 3, interviewing
Victor Cavalier.
Howard. Oh, no, that's you. Victor Cavalier. He gets me nervous. You know, he's on my back. I'm not used to that. Would you like to make a slight comment so we can hear your voice on this?
Slight comment on the fact that that Howard unnerves you?
Yes.
A slight comment, that's a profound and extended comment. That's a so. Go ahead. No, what I will say is you have misspelled my surname on your cassette that's in there. It's K, not a C. All right, take your test.
All right, the question is, Victor, would you like to tell us a little about the war years that you lived through and the Depression I'm sure you lived through with Prohibition, and what factors and influence were they, and where were you during the Depression and the Prohibition?
I enjoyed
making whiskey.
No, we did talk a little bit about that. I indicated that my father was a professional man, and there was no deprivation in our household during the Depression. And service,
that's
I think
right.
We touched on that, too.
You did.
We did. Mm-hmm. That there were no heroics, but nonetheless, I volunteered for service in the Navy.
That's right.
Served 37 months and ended up with a commission as an ensign.
What about your business life and your relationships with employees or significant achievements? I think you went over that somewhat in various activities.
Well, business, actually, I wasn't in business. I was in the faculty at Pitt for 22 years, and I've served as administrator at Road of Shalom Temple for 37 years. Many of those years overlapped. I was doing both, serving on the faculty at Pitt, teaching, and serving as the administrator at Temple. I would like to feel that my relationships as administrator at Rod of Shalom with all workers, whatever level, at Temple were extremely good. I didn't care about many things, but when I announced my retirement, the janitors, the kitchen people, the secretaries, and the rest, they were the ones who asked me to continue to serve. I appreciated their asking. I tried to be fair. I also tried to run the temple in a manner of what in the Navy was called a loose ship. I was a junior officer, but I watched captains. There were those who ran the very, very tight ship and those who ran a loose ship. And those who ran a loose ship, if they could get their crew to respond when they needed that kind of response, served as a model for me.
I think you did relate some of your significant achievements. Is there any more you could think of that we didn't record?
Well, I'm not sure what we're going to call significant achievements. I've been involved, as I indicated earlier. I have liked people. I've liked working with people. And beginning with my very young years, other people recognized leadership qualities in me, and I was willing to assume responsibility. So I've been involved in many organizations. I could go through a whole list. With something like this, it's not a matter of boasting, it's a matter of being factual. I can't go through all of them, but I have been fortunate enough and willing enough to assume responsibility so that during the course of a lifetime, I've served as president of the Pittsburgh Chapter of American Jewish Committee, chairman of the Allegheny County Council on Civil Rights, chairman or president of Jewish Family and Children's Service, chairman of the Jewish Community Relations Council when it was an independent agency and not merely a committee of the United Jewish Federation. I've been president of American Professors for Peace in the Middle East, the second chairman of the Pittsburgh Conference on Soviet Jewry, and on and on and on. In the general community, I've been a member of the Port Authority Transit Board, And at the time, I was the only member of the board who really rode a bus. I was something of a curiosity, but I would ride the buses, as I still do, virtually every day. I was also on the predecessor organization of the present Pittsburgh Cultural Trust. It fell into oblivion almost overnight, but it did good work. The Allegheny County Cultural Group. I served for more than a dozen years on the board of the Pittsburgh Ballet Theater and also on the artistic committee. I have been involved. I was on the board of the YMWHA. I came there through the Squirrel Hill IKC, and with rare exception, maybe only once did I resign from a board, not angrily, but simply because I thought the board was not doing what it functions.
Which board are you referring to then?
That was on the YMNHA. It was curious. I was still a young man. I came there because I was treasurer of the Squirrel Hill Ikes when we put up the first real building in Squirrel Hill. And many of the old guard, I mean the old-timers who joined the Y when it was still on the hill and moved it down to Oakland, and they would engage in their debates, which I thought were jokes. It would be my sense of humor. But after a number of months, when I realized that they weren't kidding about such things as where the nickels should go from the vending machines, I just felt I would get angry and start to argue and debate, which is not my style. Other than that, I believe I've enjoyed just about all of my service. I've had a theory that when I go through the chairs, I believe one of the functions of leadership is to develop the next generation of leadership so that after I've been president of something, I don't hang around. I learned from Solomon B. Freehoff, if you hang around and you say nothing, they think you become a dummy. And if you hang around and they like you and you say something, it shuts off debate. So many people think that I got angry with organizations. I've never been angry with an organization which I have served, but I have left the work to the generations which follow me.
Very good. How do you...
That's very good. I like that.
Do you view your accomplishments? You just made a good remark about that and your successes. Mm-hmm. And well, what do you view, excuse me, as your most significant accomplishment?
I view my accomplishments with pride. I've served organizations, and I've been placed in top leadership positions, and I have never been affluent. I've earned a modest income, and if I was chosen to serve, it had to be because of some abilities which I had and others recognized, not because I was going to be in a position to underwrite major functions. I feel that I've made many contributions. I say time and time again, I'm a modest man. I'm not a humble man. I understand the difference. I'm modest so that I haven't gone around trumpeting accomplishments. But in retrospect, when I have served as a president or a chairman, things were done during my term of office. Most significant is difficult to say. We live in a country in which everything has to be number one. I'm in the minority. It doesn't care if it's number one or number 14, if it's constructive and worthwhile. But looming large in my memory is my term of office as president of the Jewish Family and Children's Service. Nate Goodman was the executive director, a fine man and a good director. There was discussion during the years I served in lower offices on that board about getting some kind of a child guidance clinic, that we needed it for the agency, and nobody knew how to fund it. And then there was a discussion that the Guskey Orphanage was long since out of business, and maybe we could get that money. The discussions were along the line of how do you get the money? And I heard that question raised over a period of at least 5 years. And it was said that Lewis Kaplan, of blessed memory, was in control of that money. In his childhood, he was orphaned by the Johnstown flood and was in that orphanage for a while. It's Lewis Kaplan who was there. So I volunteered to talk to Lewis Kaplan. I said, I'll go and see him and see if he would make the money available. Well, I knew he liked me. He was a brilliant man and a funny man in that he didn't want to have too many friends. He was very, very critical, usually because he was on the mark and impatient. But I knew he liked me because Dr. Freehoff liked me and he liked Dr. Freehoff. I arranged an appointment and went to see Lewis Kaplan. Maybe I was more emboldened than I might have been. I stated my business, saying that I'm president of JFCS. We would love to have a child guidance clinic. And he said, wonderful idea. In fact, it's such a good idea, I'll release the money, but I will hire an attorney to do all the legal work so there'll be no misunderstanding about my role in this. And overnight, the Guskey Child Guidance Clinic was established at JFCS. I believe Norman Kresch was the first medical director, and I think that Norman still serves in that capacity to this day. I don't get credit except in memory, my own memory. I don't care about the credit. What I care is that the Pittsburgh Jewish community had a child guidance center.
And still has it, right?
Yes, and still has it. Yes.
Is also, Dr. Kresch still with it?
Yes, he is. Again, working with Nate Goodman, he was reluctant, I wasn't. It was the time of President Lyndon Johnson's war on poverty, and Pittsburgh's JFCS was the first Jewish organization involved in the poverty program. Things may have gone awry subsequently, but then things always go awry subsequently. But we were involved, had our own Cashman district and a million one other things which went with it. As the second chair of the Pittsburgh Conference on Soviet Jewry, this might sound a little nasty, but it's factual. Rabbi Bernard Pupko was the first chair of that conference, and in retrospect, what he wanted to do was have meetings, and he would address the meeting. There was another faction competing with the Pittsburgh Conference. When I took over the presidency, the first thing that I did was to bring the two groups together, and then we became involved in serious work on behalf of Soviet Jewry, not an occasional
oration. Can you give me
oration.
The date?
No, the years fly by, but this is 1990. My guess would be about 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay. About 1975.
Is there anything in your life you wish you could have changed?
Well, is there any? Yes. But it's for a perverse reason. The perverse reason is I wouldn't want to relive my life the same way simply because I've experienced this way and it's been very nice. I might want to try something else. I had the opportunity to go to law school. I didn't want to go simply because I was concerned with what I'll call the larger state of ethics, the idea that everybody is entitled to a defense and a fair trial. I believe in that in the abstract, but I couldn't picture myself in that particular role, defending people whom I felt should not be defended, and things of that nature. But if I had my life to live over, I think I might go to law school and go for the big money, to make a lot of money, just to see what my life would be like if I had a lot of money, and if people would admire me and my intellect, not because I had any intellect, but because I had a lot of money. In America, we assume if somebody has money, he or she has to be very, very intelligent. I have never noticed in reality any direct correlation between a person's affluence and a person's intellect. But it would be fun for me to live a totally different kind of life, to have people call me up and ask me if I would like to be president of an organization. I have always worked my way through the chairs of an organization. I might have become president of three times as many organizations if I could have chaired them in the first instance instead of in the fifth or seventh instance.
May I interrupt with a continuation of a thought? You made a remark that you were always concerned more about the larger sphere of ethics and therefore felt that there are certain defenses shouldn't be pressed the way seem to be. Why? How do you account for your participation in the ACLU, which does precisely the opposite of that. I wonder how that's squared.
I did not mention, among many other organizations, which I didn't mention, I was extremely young. It was at the depths of the Senator Joe McCarthy era, and a group of people were reviving the Pittsburgh chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union. Mm-hmm. I was one of that number. If there is some kind of a contradiction, I'm not certain. But I have believed that a Jewish community thrives better in a liberal environment and one which has a constitution such as we have in the United States. And originally, and for most of the time, the ACLU was devoted to protecting that constitution. All right, in order to do that, they have to take on some terrible cases. If you have an exemplary citizen, he's not going to break the law and he's not going to give you the substance of testing. On the other hand, people who are not very nice and who are going to break the law, if you want to help defend them, you can test the constitutional principle for the much larger majority. So I haven't found a conflict in that. It may be rationalization on my part, but that's how I have rationalized it. And on the local level, even though in recent times I've heard people make snide comments that there wasn't really a chapter, it was a talking society back in the McCarthy era, that's simply not true. Many of the cases that we would defend would be for blacks. During that era, a black driving a car in one of our smaller towns at night would find the police stopping him, take him out of the car, and beating him up for no reason whatever. Then they would contrive some absurd kind of charge against this person. There were youngish lawyers at that time who would defend these particular people. Also, Safety Director Rosenberg, now he's Judge Rosenberg, when he was Safety Director, invading various newsstands and the like, what I'll call the obscenity cases. We seem to have a revival of that in the country at the present time, but what was free speech and what was a free press and what weren't? What I would say, the abiding principles of the American Civil Liberties Union were what we were testing during the era of my activity. And there, too, I was treasurer and a vice chairman. I never served as chairman of the Pittsburgh chapter, but I did hold office there.
I take it that you are not currently active.
Correct. Mm-hmm. I'm not. Mm-hmm. It's also thrilling. I was young to go to a national meeting of the ACLU and meet, names escape me now, it's allowed, but some of the founding patrons of the ACLU were still
Leo
alive.
Pfeffer, was he involved?
Leo Pfeffer I met through AJ Congress on a different... Yeah. No, I'm talking about the old-time Christian leadership. Well, I mentioned this in 1963 when I was chairman of JCRC. I went to the great civil rights meeting in Chicago, which was being chaired by Rabbi Heschel and Martin Luther King Jr. So I've met some of the rich and famous, and I can say honestly that they all have feet of clay. It's maintained my perspective of everything. You work hard for a cause, but it's very hard to find saints.
Don't tell me you're saying that Rabbi Heschel had feet of clay?
No, well, I didn't know him other than to shake hands and that. But in general, people with whom I worked in my younger years, when I was in my 20s and early 30s, who became great leaders in their 60s, they all had feet of clay, if you can remember.
Well, they all had human feet.
Which is all right. I acknowledge that. Okay. In our tradition, we accept that and base a lot upon it.
Could you contrast Pittsburgh with Pittsburgh yesterday? That's Pittsburgh today against Pittsburgh yesterday, socially, culturally, politically, and environmentally.
Yeah, the answer is yes, but you want a more extended answer more than that. All right, I came to Pittsburgh, as I have indicated, in February 1943, and that was still the old Pittsburgh. And the Pittsburgh of today, 1990, is a radically different city, mostly for the better. The environment then was dreadful. I didn't use a telephone. I would write letters home. That was the custom. Telephone calls, even when they were only a nickel, were too expensive. And I would write to my mother and father in 1943 simply about the atmosphere. Didn't use much Kleenex, used handkerchiefs in that era, that when I would go to blow my nose, that my handkerchief would be black and sooty, something I had never experienced growing up on Long Island. And that on a windowsill, if I would wipe it clean from left to right, by the time I got right, I'd have to start over again left. A white shirt I couldn't wear for more than 2 hours. Many people have forgotten that it wasn't just the mills belching what they belched in that era, but most homes were using soft coal, which also added to the pollution in the atmosphere. But I liked Pittsburgh. It was a teenager's eye view of Pittsburgh because I was meeting nice young people at college. I enjoyed the courses. I probably never worked as hard at academics as I should have. My guess is I've been an underachiever, even though I could achieve decent or better than decent grades. I was only here for one semester and went into the Navy at the end of my first semester at Pitt. I came back in 1946, and the city was changing. The pollution was being eliminated. Smoke was being brought under control. There was wonderful construction taking place downtown, what we would call Renaissance One. Looking at the city today, my one regret is that we have gone from the ninth largest city in the United States when I came here. Today, I believe we're the 43rd largest city. My regret is that we don't have a greater population. We had 750,000, and now we have about 380,000, approximately half. Not to be snobbish, from my personal point of view, the population today is much more to my liking, because most of the shot in a beer population, the mill workers who would go right into a saloon at the end of a turn in the mill, most of them unfortunately lost their jobs and their economic opportunity. There are many, many more professional people. So that high culture, which I enjoy, we're surfeited with it. We had a good symphony orchestra then. We have a much better symphony orchestra today. We had next to no dance, and I enjoy classical ballet. Today we have a very, very good ballet company. As far as chamber music and the like, we have more than any one person can possibly attend. As far as theater, we have so much little theater that's good. Then it was just the Nixon. We did get all of the road shows during that era, but I would prefer, since we still get the road shows, I prefer so much small theater, which we have poetry, which was virtually non-existent at that time, to have magnificent venues. Then things would come to the Syria Mosque or to Carnegie Music Hall. I saw visiting dance troupes in Carnegie Music Hall, and I wondered that when these people would leap on stage that they didn't decapitate themselves in the boxes on the side. Today, having the Benedum and Heinz Hall, we have wonderful places, and part of grand culture is the environment. As someone once said, ballet is not a democratic art. It was the art of royalty, and if it is an art of royalty, it merits a royal setting. For me, much nicer. When I came back to Pitt in 1946, if there would be a visiting lecturer, we'd virtually close down at noon hour so that those who would want to hear a lecture could go to the lecture. Nowadays, there are so many things at Pitt, at CMU, at Duquesne, at Chatham, at Carlo. It's impossible to keep up with things. In 1946 and 1947, maybe even 1948, I falsely would pride myself on thinking that anything of cultural value I would attend. I regret today that given the finances of our city, loss of so many affluent people, that the museum can't put on as many wonderful shows as I'm sure they would like to, but the addition of the Scaife Gallery to the museum added immensely to the cultural environment. Little galleries and studios in parts of Oakland on the south side, I repeat, except for the loss of population, I think everything is to the good. I would like to think if the rest of the people who had lived here 40 and 50 years ago were still here, they would taste of a lot of this culture. It would enhance and beautify their lives, too.
Those are wonderful remarks, and they parallel my sentiments very much and experience.
Well, we are getting to the end. And this is the last question on all these sheets. What other information would you like to cover or add? Honoraries, honors, awards, publications, or anything else you can think of?
Well, I've received them, and it's momentarily gratifying, but I don't like to talk about them. What I would say is the most important thing in my life, and my wife, Mina Servan Cavalier, agrees with me, was the adoption of our twins. By far, it exceeds anything and everything combined which I have done. I have told my children in their teen years and in their 20s that all the rest comes and goes, but that they have to carry on certain traditions, certain things for the future, and that civilized people can look to the next generation, as I felt in my public life and organizations. Either you bring along other leaders in my private life. I just think that parenthood is very, very important. And I'm just trying to guess whether I didn't hear that in Jewish tradition, we achieve immortality as part of the people by bringing along a next generation and not selfishly letting things end with us.
Very well put. Is there any question you have?
Yes, I really appreciated those last remarks. I made similar sentiments. I can't stand how similar I feel the two of us.
Good. We worked on things.
Yeah.
I'm sure the motivations were similar, too.
Yeah. Since you alluded to some organizational thing, I'm going to revert to that for a moment before I get back to Road of Shalom things, which I'd like to talk a lot about. Item one is, you remember a long time ago, there was a priest, he was Monsignor something, he became a cardinal. Do you remember him?
Yes, Cardinal Wright.
Wright, yes, Wright.
Yes.
Did you ever meet him? Can you tell me a little bit about him?
I can't tell you a little. I have met him, yes, I did meet him. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of his first public orations, other than within his own diocese, was for the American Jewish Committee when I was the program chairman. Mm-hmm. The reason I can remember it vividly, he was a very nice person. Mm-hmm. I'd say, as far as his church went, a very liberal person, mm-hmm. a very well-educated person. Mm-hmm. Our Rabbi Jacob, Walter Jacob, senior rabbi at Road of Shalom, they were personal friends, mm-hmm. as friendly as mm-hmm. two people like that mm-hmm. could be. Bishop Wright, when he was going to be invested as a cardinal, brought Rabbi Jacob on his plane to Rome to be there for the ceremonies. The reason I remember Bishop Wright addressing the Pittsburgh chapter of the American Jewish Committee was because of my introduction. I've lost most of it, but I did a little research, and I committed to memory the various stages that a human being went through before they could attain statehood in the Roman Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. So I introduced him because, in my introduction, he was about four steps along the way of five steps to becoming a saint. He laughed very lustily, too.
That's very good.
But while he was here, there were very cordial relationships. I'm trying to get the chronology right, whether Pope John the 23rd was the pope around that time. And, of course, as we know, he opened up the mm-hmm. church so that where in my earlier years at Road of Shalom, a Roman Catholic cleric would never set foot in the building, things changed radically. Some nuns might come to one mm-hmm. of Dr. Freehoff's book reviews. certain things that Dr. Jacob started, interfaith or interreligious things, where we would get priests and nuns. For this community, from my point of view, he was a very good person.
Do you recall any other non-Jewish clerics? Rice, for example?
I never dealt with him. Well, I dealt with some, because at JCRC we were always involved in interreligious things. Names are starting to elude me. The priest who then became the bishop in Greensburg, who just retired, worked with him, a decent, a very, very modest man. He would almost never want to see his name in the newspapers. Father McIlvain,
yes,
still worked with him on certain things. I felt bad for him because he is a genuine Christian. He takes up all the good causes, and I've always felt that most other people in his church figure that he's crazy anyhow, so you let him do whatever he wants to do. He's not going to affect the larger scene. I do think in many ways he has affected larger scenes. He is committed. Not a lot of joking around. It's not that sort of thing, but Donald McIlvain, I can't give him higher praise than say to me a genuine Christian with all the right motivations.
Have you had any contact with the seminary up on Highland?
No, I have not. Our rabbis have. Dr. Jacob has taught courses. Rabbi Stateman has taught courses. Other than to meet the chair or something like that, invite them to give a speech at a Sunday morning breakfast at Rosh Hashanah, no.
But you haven't. Was a clergyman up there. His name eludes me too. I'm losing my mind this morning.
Which, not the German name.
The German guy. He was the son of the famous theologian.
I have met him.